Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Today, we're very honored to have Rob Jensen. He is the president of Voss Lighting, and Voss is a company that is focused on lighting design and services. Started in 1939 by Henry Voss in Lincoln, Nebraska, when lighting specialists were a rarity in the industry. From 1939 to 1976 was when Michael Voss took the reins of Voss Lighting. It was then that the growth to the current 14 branches encompassing 16 cities throughout the United States took place. Those 16 cities are primarily in the central part of the U.S. from Minnesota to Texas, branching out to the southwest and the southeast in parts of the U.S. In 2017, Rob became the president of Voss Lighting and Michael the chairman of the board. He started in Voss Lighting at the opening of the Dallas branch in 1985 and lived there for 5 years before moving back and taking on the role of vendor relations, negotiating annual programs, handling products and pricing. His role was primarily in this area, while also learning all facets of the business. The journey was involved being on the management team, becoming the VP of products and pricing and purchasing, and now the president. 2008 was a pivotal year for Voss as well as the whole industry with the disruptive technology of LEDs. They arrived on the scene. 5 years later, they made changes towards a turnkey process of selling projects. That's right, like a lot of us. Probably a lot of rebates in there too. Since then, it has been their focus. The company continues to evolve down the path and growth area of project-based services with through lighting knowledge. And I think a lot of us do that here at Nailed. But before we open up the conversation with Rob, we got to take it down to Long Island, New York with the gangsters at Satco, Greg Eric. Go to SATCO.com, buddy.
Hey, you need an A19, a PAR 38, a wall pack, a flat panel, an under cabinet light, a decorative light, a socket, a canopy, and an exit sign? Do you? Maybe someday? You know, you can go to Voss Lighting, you can go to Premier Lighting, you can go to Atlas Lighting, or you can go to Satco. They're like a lighting distributor. They've got everything. You know, that's our job, is to fill that need for someone. But from a manufacturer side, not a lot of people can do it, but Satco can.
The gangsters, SATCO.com. That's right. Do the light thing. Do the right thing with Satco. And, of course, you want to hang out with Satco. Atlas Lighting, Voss Lighting, Premier Lighting, all those really people that really understand lighting from its past to now where it is today. You can come down to the Nailed Convention. That's right. I was going to say Austin, but it's actually Dallas, Texas. I don't know why I was going to say Austin, but yep. It's in Dallas, Texas. That's right. America's Lighting Convention is happening. Join us. Come on down. NAILD.org. What's happening at Voss, Rob?
You know, a lot of things. We just closed out our fiscal year June 30, so you set everything back to zero and you start over again and grind out another year. So it's a day in the life of a lighting distributor in these days. So, but things are good, and the work is always available. Lighting, I always am encouraged by the word, you know, the concept of lighting, quite frankly. Everybody needs it. It does still burn out, irrespective of the, you know, the issues of what people say that LEDs last forever. It's a fallacy that I've heard you guys speak toward. They do burn out, and there's always a need, and there's always, you know, now instead of our history is more on that MRO side for that. Up until whatever that, you know, 2008 year was, that would have been an MRO was our primary function, replacing light bulbs, ballast, and those things. We quite frankly hated fixtures in the old days. We disincentivized selling fixtures until LED rolled around, and then we changed our tune on that front. So,
and but it's unique, your MRO business.
Yeah, go ahead.
With your MRO business, I know you guys are in 14 locations, Mike mentioned at the beginning. Did you do a lot of it through state contracts and government contracts? And I mean, I know you're dealing with all sorts of types of customers, but did you have a lot of that?
Sure. Yeah, our mix of business over the years is a lot of people think that's all we do with state business. It really wasn't in the early days, way back in the 70s, 80s. That was probably 90% of our business. But as I took on and went into the branch kind of function, it balanced out. It was maybe 35 to 40% of our business, and the rest was what we'd call down the street, just in the markets you're at, calling on every mom and pop shop to the 10-story building and up. And then later, even in that year, we always kind of dabbled in national accounts, and it became a portion of our business to, and still is to this day, albeit still not, you know, I wouldn't say it's more like 20% of our business. And then the other, you know, fixtures and projects and is taking over most of our business in the mix of products anyway. Yeah, because back in the old days, Greg, light bulbs and ballast was 90% of our business, you know, in the MRO days. And that's all we sold, you know, and people look at you funny. We belong to AD and the full line guys go, you make a living selling light bulbs, you know, and everybody thinks of an A19. I can say that with you guys, because you know what an A19 is. They still don't even know what an A19 is, you know, kind of.
Sure.
Thing. But they just think of an A19 and how do you make a living selling an A19? But no, there's a whole lot of light bulbs out there. And, you know, way back in the day, you had miniature lamps, you had photo and stage and studio lamps, all those things that we all grew up with that fell into the camp of lighting, and all that's now, you know, gone by the wayside. So you just keep evolving and changing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that a lot of people, independent lighting distributors and Nailed had much higher margins than the average electrical distributor out there. And, you know, those businesses where I would call them like a Voss Lighting, an Atlas Lighting, Premier, these three companies that are on this thing right now, would have been like pseudo subscription businesses. And what I mean by that is that, you know, it was very, the revenues were very predictable. You know, you knew how much you were going to sell every month. Maybe it was up or down 5%, but it was high profit and it was the same customers that were used to paying you on a regular basis. And you had these customers for decades and decades sometimes, and they would pay you within the terms. And those businesses were very valuable. I would say that a distributor in the, like, let's say a 1990s pre-LED lighting distributor, that was a valuable business that could be sold to someone else. And that person could take over that business and they're, you know, from owner to owner because of the way that light bulbs were ordered, the way that they burned out, the frequency and the knowledge people had. Now you got to eat what you kill, Rob. And
exactly right.
It's not as it's not as valuable.
No, and it's changed, you know. But it's interesting you say that though, Mike, because in the same sense, you still see, you know, we just saw Frontier Lighting get bought up by a full line guy, and some of the other lighting specialist guys are being bought up by the full line guys. Everybody recognizes the need for a lighting specialist in the industry, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future because obviously COVID changed the whole world and every concept with it. But the reality is there's always a need for lighting, and there's always going to be a need for lighting. It's going to change, I think, going forward. We're all having to do more with less. But with that comes those bars of what's my bottom bar. In the early days of us and our structure, you know, we went after everything. And partly of what you're saying, Mike, in the sense of the residuals that you got, every order, it all accumulated because the big three at the time controlled 99% of the market to a certain, you didn't have all the washed, watered down effects of a lot of smaller guys. And they had all the inventory types that you typically needed in most of the marketplaces. So every order accumulated to make you more valuable to that manufacturer, whichever one you chose. And you as a business, you're right. It was like an insurance policy.
Exactly.
You just kept the business and flowing in and out of your companies. And in the same sense, when we started really growing and adding the branches and things of that nature, we figured out the model of how long does it take, you know, and when's the payback and what's it look like. And so you could create a formula and what it looked like and make it work to grow your business. So
I used to walk door to door. I used to walk door to door selling boxes of light bulbs. I used to go door to door to businesses, and I would write orders, and I could write 5-10 orders a day and make a living like on my commissions from it. That's the people don't do that anymore. There's no way to do that. The first thing I remember, there was a company in Canada that was very strong. It was called Lightmore. And you mentioned that Frontier Lighting had been purchased.
Oh, yeah.
We threw a party when HD Supply bought Lightmar. Oh, man. We were so happy that somebody that knew nothing about lighting took that lighting company and bought it. We literally threw a party. So I think, you know, I think that there's a little bit of a period of consolidation and mergers and acquisitions right now that's leak. It started in the manufacturing. Now it's leaking down into distribution. People are trying to acquire knowledge through acquisition. But I don't think they're going to run a traditional lighting distribution business, which I think makes Voss and Premier and Atlas more valuable. What do you think, Rob?
I agree. And in fact, where I was going is the same sense is that as our bars have gone up on what can I maintain as a what's my average order, you know, as a company, and what do I want them chasing? Our bar has gone up, and because of just the sheer nature of the business and the cost and you eat what you kill kind of thing, Michael, in regards to that, I think there's going to be a little bit of maybe some resurgence. There's opportunity, I guess, for a small guy to get back into this industry and go down to do that door to door, because I can't service those guys. We've always had the Grangers and those guys out in the fields, yet their bars are higher than mine. Their scraps I can live off and make a living on, which we all have. You know, if they were going to take over the world, they would have done it a long time ago, and they'll never will, because people still need service. They need answers, and the product. And the concepts that we try to sell and bring to the market is invaluable to them. Now, I can't do the whole market. None of us can. Mm-hmm. We fit into where we are. Now, sure, I dabble up in the high ends, and then I have still low. But you find your sweet spots, you live in it. And that's the same thing. But I think there might be some, you know, guys coming back into the market that want to do the door-to-door, because it's still there's going to be an MRO with LED that wave's coming again, and people are going to have needs there. And, you know, for us, it's changing into more, you know, instead of walking into the building, what's your light bulb needs, ballast, it's what's your fixture replacement program? Because I don't think the industry understands that concept, you know, that what they're buying, there's nothing replaceable in it, because the industry is still too volatile. There's no standards. So it's educating people a little bit on that end as to what is your fixture. And it's a startling question in a way. But we understand the realities, and you guys have heard some of your podcasts in regards to some of that. The realities of drivers and the boards and all, there's nothing replaceable right now to speak of. It's not worth our time to chase it, quite frankly. It's a pain in the rear. So that comes into play as well as far as opportunities in the future for our industry. Mm.
So without giving away any trade secrets, are you guys actually proposing like a group relamp, a fixture reinstall, if we call it that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, amazingly enough, you were already seeing, you know, first generation fixtures and replacing with the next generation, whatever that may be. It may be Gen 4 in some cases. But yeah, some of that's already going on. You're seeing it in the lamps for sure. And definitely I was just down in San Antonio, and they had one that was that situation. The first gen fixtures were burning up. There's nothing to do with it except replace it. And that's what they ended up doing, replacing all the fixtures with new. So, you know, it's coming, you know, it's differently. The waves are different because life is longer and things of that nature, but it's a huge industry. There's a lot of business out there to be had. So,
I think, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. And I just had this car dealership, and they're going to renovate the whole car dealership in 2 or 3 years or something like that. Guy's talking about a $10 million renovation. So I just want to fix those fixtures that are there. And I said, this is going to be really expensive to fix these light fixtures, bud. You know, I'm telling you, you're going to be. So I think we fixed 8 light fixtures, and it cost them $6,000 to do this. Okay. And we could have replaced those light fixtures for half of that, except they wouldn't have matched the ones that were in his dealership. They looked half like they were early LEDs. They kind of could have been induction. We had to take one down to see what it was. And so it's interesting that, you know, that guy could have spent half the money and just replaced all the fixtures with new. That's so sad in a way, but it is what it is.
It is. It's the cards we're dealt. We just have to deal with them and bring a little bit of reality to the industry and to the people to help them understand. I think people are starting to get it, but I still think there's a misinformation or a misunderstanding of LED that no, they don't last forever, and it's the weakest link, you know, the driver. The LED chips themselves might go 50,000 hours, but the driver might only have a 10,000 hour life in it. So here you go. Now what? Mm. So, you know, and that's where, you know, as a company, we've come a long ways away. We pride ourselves on our age. You know, 1939 is a long time to be in the industry. Now, I'll ask you guys a question. You probably haven't had this. I'll turn the tables on you. You guys know what? Do you know what BR stands for? And yeah. Like a BR reflector.
Ultraflector.
What's it stand for?
Bulge reflector.
Okay. You know what it really stands for?
No. I guess not. I thought it was bulge
reflector. That's what we've commonly used it. I'm going to hold up for you. You see that company right there?
Bird's Eye.
Bird's Eye reflector lamps. BR, he developed the Bird's Eye reflector. The BR lamp is where it really initiated. Now it turned into bulge reflector because it's got that bulge in it to pump more light on it. And here's my lighting geekdom coming out because I love this lighting industry. It's a joy and a blast, you know, and our history is, but our founder, Henry Voss, that's what he started selling. When you're talking Greg going door to door, that's what he did. Mm-hmm. And we have our history on our website and it's pretty lengthy, but it's quite fascinating at the same time as to that history and what he did. You know, going into a storefront retail and, you know, back then they only had A19 or A23 or PS35s, those big globular bulbs and, you know, 300 watts in a, you know, well, they came out with a 150 BR40, the Bird's Eye reflector. And it was actually developed by that company, Bird's Eye, Clarence Bird's Eye, the Bird's Eye Frozen Foods that's still around today. That was the company.
Yeah.
And he wanted more light in his bunkers to shine on his frozen foods. So he couldn't get GE or Westinghouse or Sylvania to make them for him. So he just started his own company, did it himself. And Henry Voss went around selling those to retailers all over Minnesota and down in Lincoln and around the Nebraska area and things. That was kind of our start and part of that history of, you know, where we cut our teeth on, always in that specialty lighting arena. So I just thought I'd turn the tables. I thought I'd have fun.
Yeah,
that's good.
Now I know something more.
I knew you were a lighting dork. Greg, I knew he was a lighting dork because of all the catalogs behind him.
Oh, yeah. I still got
exactly
a few,
right.
Not that many.
I cleaned it up a little bit for this podcast. So what you're not seeing is it would be amazing. So
for those listening and not watching, Rob's got a whole bunch of what looks like to me very old lighting catalogs, the old binders, and that you'd have the catalog inside and then the suggested retail price in yellow and then all that stuff. Yeah, he's got it all there. In the background.
Yeah, it's and some of it's a museum in my office, quite frankly. Well, over there, you see behind me back on that shelf?
Yeah.
Or right below the deer, there's that is a G96 stage and studio lamp that won the Academy Award for Technology in 1958. I got this from a guy that I told him, if you ever get rid of that, I'll buy it from you. And he graciously gave it to me. And, you know, I'm proud to have that thing. It's so big. I mean, the thing, you know, it's you guys can do the math. It's a foot plus in diameter. So the thing is huge. And it was what they used to light the stages at the time, you know? So yeah, it's a wonderful industry to say the least. So
you guys have the whole history there. Got to go check it out sometime.
Oh, it's quite, you know, I could go on and on and I won't bore you, but you know, but lighting guys understand and it gets in your blood. It's hard to get out. So
I have a T17 Power Groove sitting behind my desk. I love it. It's so fat and it's got the grooves in it. It's like, I just love that light bulb. You know, I also like the way low pressure sodium bulbs look really cool to me. Like if you pull out SOX 90 or something like that, and you pull it out, that's a really funny looking technology right there, man.
Yeah, it was. We still have one that'll light up downstairs just for the sake of it. So, but yeah, it's always interesting.
All right.
So you guys have the industry changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
And
Go
you
ahead,
have
Greg.
14 locations. Omaha is the headquarters.
Lincoln's actually the headquarters.
Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah, okay. Lincoln, Nebraska, which is where I'm at right now.
Nice. And when was the last new market you entered? What year do you think it was? And what market?
The last market. Yeah, you got to love those occupancy sensors, Greg.
Nice. Yeah, that's the last energy market, and it turns off.
The last market we entered was Colorado. I think it was Colorado. Let me look at my map here real quick. It was Colorado, the Denver market. So, and I don't remember the year. I think it's about 10, 12 years. We haven't opened up in a market in quite a while. You know, that's something that we're relearning because, like I mentioned before, the formula for opening branches, when we did what we did MRO-wise, was one thing. Now, to your point, Michael, in regards to what business looks like and eating what you're shooting kind of thing, it's a different formula that we aren't as comfortable with. What we're experimenting or looking at right now is just, can we open up and do it in reverse? Before we go open a branch, hire people, put all the investment in at the front side of the equation. Now we're looking at, does it make sense to work our way into a branch and, you know, remote have salesmen and things of that nature? That's what we're kind of experimenting with and trying. And doing it in reverse of what we've done in the past, get the salesman out there, because the stocking and things of that nature as a job to job is different. You know, it's so much stranger walking through our warehouses because there's more space for dedicated to jobs and projects than there are to the stock and flow of products out there on the shelves. So, and that's where we're experimenting with more recently.
The only way I would do it, like, I would never put a flag in the ground. So I've always been, because I entered at the beginning of the, I filled out a rebate application in, I don't know, 2001 or 2000 or something. Guy was going from T12HOs to T8HOs. Wow. What a time, right? Big savings, buddy. Big savings there. So anyway, but, you know, I filled out that rebate application we did. But, you know, I always felt like it's very difficult to this project business. It's not like you're not investing in your customers in the same way you were with MRO. Once you got a customer buying from you and they started to buy from you, right, they kept buying from you. And so the only way I would do it would be to buy another lighting distributor in a market that had low penetration of LEDs. That would be the only way I would do it.
Yeah. And that's the, you know, we'll see, you know, time will tell as to what that really looks like and whether that formula works or not, you know, kind of thing. Unfortunately, you know, there's not a lot of lighting guys out there. And then, you know, how do you figure out the penetration of LEDs in a market anymore? You know, sometimes I don't even think that the major manufacturers even know because it's been proliferated with so many of the smaller green creatives and Sadcos and other guys out there that are, coming into the market that waters down the overall who's keeping track of the numbers like they used to.
There's no numbers. There's no reliable numbers in lighting anymore. You're right about that.
Yeah, no,
there isn't.
So it's hard. Yeah. Oof. There's a lot of things that have changed. So
do you think, I think one thing that I don't see ever changing, you know, there's a lot of talk and a lot of online presence and for certain companies, but lighting seems like it's always going to remain to some degree market-based. Like, to have true success, you need to have a presence in the market. Do you guys agree or disagree? Yeah. Where are we at with that?
Yeah, no, and that gets to a little bit what Michael was saying. You know, you do have to establish a beachhead and get there. It's just how do you make that happen and how quickly can you turn around? Because obviously relationships, it takes time to develop. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, we've been fortunate to be in most of our markets for 10 plus years at this point and way ahead of the curve of most of what's gone on in regards to the changes with LED and the what's forced us into so many changes that the industry's, you know, scrambling to figure it out and understand it. So you're right. And I think that's part of that equation, that you're trying to figure out the math of how long can I have a beachhead only or do I go full branch, and how does that work in total? So
I would, you know, you asked both of us. So I would say that, you know, you were shopping recently and you were asking me for my advice, Greg. Mm-hmm. And yeah. You were looking online, you're going to buy something online. And I said, why don't you go to a local shop in St. Paul that's a professional? And then they can help you, because you're not buying something for $100, you were buying something for $3,000 or $4,000, right? And you're looking okay. online, and you're going to, you know, Amazon and all that sort of stuff. Because as lighting distributors, we're very critical. We laugh at things sometimes, what the customers buy on Amazon and on websites and stuff. And so there, I believe there'll always be a regionality to lighting simply due to its complexity. And as things become more complex, what you find is that knowledge becomes more valuable, right? So
yeah.
I think we're going to see an inversion in the world of distribution, where we're going to go from sellers of products to sellers of knowledge, and that lighting distributors are going to be knowledge workers. And that's, and we, and in a way we always were, but now other people just won't want to get involved with something that complex, like repairing the driver on a fixture in a dealership where they don't want to fix the switch fixtures. Everyone just left the room and said, "You're on your own, buddy." And then, you know, right. I come in and be, "Okay, well, this is how much it's going to cost. Are you okay with that?"
Right.
Okay, great. And so I think that there's going to be a power in knowledge, and that knowledge will be regional because it takes so long to learn it. And that's why Nailed is around trying to create a whole bunch of different kinds of training programs for people. But even training programs yep. don't replace experience, Rob. And
no, yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, years in the business is something that's tough to compete with.
Yeah, unfortunately, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I'm a 38 year geek in lighting, and don't plan on retiring too soon yet. I've still got a few years under my belt, and I don't know if we're gonna see. You know, we're a company, we got it. Quite a few 10, you know, our average employee is 10 years plus at this point. And, but yet at the same time, I'm not sure if that's going to be the pattern, as to just seeing what the workforce looks like and what's coming, and whether they, you know, just love it for the sake of loving it, you know, kind of thing, to gain the experience of what you're talking about, Michael. That'll be, you know, now, you know, there's some experience. I can bore you with experience on incandescents, HID, you know, PARs and all that kind of stuff, and fluorescence, and, you know, who cares? No one's out calling me asking, you know, how's the Alto capsule work in a Phillips lamp kind of thing anymore.
Yeah, I want to hear about ceramic metal halide.
Right. You're not getting those calls, you know. At best, you're getting those calls to say, what is this? And then what can I get in LED?
Yes.
You know, that's about the extent of the, you know, what's in the old to moving forward into the new of LED. So. But yeah, experience, you're right. It does count for something. And that's where I think we're reaping the benefits of that, even though, like I mentioned, fixtures for us is a newer game. You know, we've been doing it now for about 12 to 15 years, somewhere in there, and really embracing it. I mean, we've got it in the sense of, we have a lighting agency within our company that does what lighting agencies do, because with my exposure in 14 branches, trying to get 14 rep agents that all agree to do business with me is like pulling teeth. That ain't happening. So we had to develop our own ways of doing the AGI layouts and specifying and looking at, you know, cross-referencing and all that kind of stuff. And so we've just done it in-house and are handling those types of things to expand where and what we're doing in the field. So then to your point, Michael, earlier, in the sense of the experience, I have to keep a core of guys that understand it. I don't have to have everybody having all that working knowledge all the time. It'll come over time as long as they stick around. But if I've got a good core of people that can handle it, that seems to have been a model that's worked well for us.
One of the errors that I think, and Greg, maybe you can jump in on this one too, is like a lot. What you'll see is you'll get a resume from somebody maybe in their late 20s or 30s or whatever, and they'll have 10 lighting companies on their resume, or 6 lighting companies or whatever. That's not experience. I hate to say it.
No,
like in my opinion, that's the you're starting over and starting over and starting over again. How are you dealing with the human resources? You say the average employee is 10 years with you guys. Are you having trouble finding new people? Are they interested in money? Do they stick around?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, quite frankly, that's a worldwide problem. I mean, I don't know where you don't hear that problem going on with, you know, just finding good employees, you know, and you get a lot of the, there's not a lot of shine and polish to our industry, you know, as the electrical, like I mentioned with AD, and we have small groups and peer groups that we get together with and things of that nature. And, you know, it's the same thing, you know, there's nothing fancy and grandeur about selling lighting, selling electrical, selling whatever, you know, you hear it from every industry, the trucking industry, the electrical contractors industry. You got more retiring out than we have coming in because it's hard work. But I think there's opportunity beyond belief to make good money, quite frankly. But it's just finding people that really want to stick to it and have a love for it. And so what are we doing? It's the same process that we've always done. But you're right. We're having turnover on the lower end of that 10 less. That's where I don't know if we're going to see 20-year employees. I think my scale is only going to keep shrinking as far as that 10-year average right now. In fact, it is. As people retire out and things of that nature. And the reality is we'll have to deal with it, you know, and I don't know the answer quite yet on that one, Michael, because it is, it's interesting in regards to what that answer looks like. It really comes down to the people, whether they want to, and it may come where, you know, do we hit financial straits enough where people settle down and have to work? Whereas right now, it seems like it's still too optional. And it takes a world depression going on to get people back in the saddle of, you know, it probably is that way. You know, there's nothing new that goes on in the world that hasn't gone on before. The mergers and acquisitions, you know, that's going on now, it's all cyclical. You've got things and then new upstarts come and it all goes again. And it's just going to be the way our industry always has and always will be. In the meantime, you just got to adapt, you know, and figure out what you need to do. And sometimes that's more individualistic, and sometimes there's group things you can, best practices you can try too.
To touch on a little bit of brand, you guys I know have historically always been strong with Phillips, or at least as long as I've known you. Do you still feel a need for that presence to have a strong brand behind you, or where are you guys at in that terms?
Yeah, you know, that's, yes, I would say that's still important for us. I don't know if it's as important. You know, our history goes with us and our volume. Using the big guys and having a big guy in your corner helps, especially, you know, going through what we just went through in COVID. You know, you can leverage those types of relationships to help you get things when things are tight. And that's been something that, you know, we're very loyal in our manufacturers and slow to bring on new. Quite frankly, you know, we did more with Sylvania way back because of Stage and Studio and photo lamps, miniatures and things of that nature, and lamps even at one time, because that company I told you about, Bird's Eye Reflector Company, they ended up getting bought by a company called Wabash. Wabash got bought, and ultimately they ended up getting bought by Sylvania. So we merged into Sylvania kind of by default. And in the same way we got, I'm telling you all these goofy, weird things, but Kenrad was a company we dealt with as well. It stood for Kentucky Radio. They manufactured lamps down in Kentucky. It was a plant owned by Westinghouse. And we could buy from Kenrad, but Westinghouse would have nothing to do with us. We took the state of Nebraska with Kenrad lamps. They couldn't produce the lamps, and so they'd actually ship Westinghouse lamps to us to fulfill the state of Nebraska contract.
Yeah, lighting is so weird like that. Lighting has so many weird things like that. Yeah,
and so that history led us into, they finally threw up their hands and said, okay, we'll set you up with Westinghouse. And that's how we started our relationship with Westinghouse, because Sylvania didn't at that time, and Westinghouse did. And then Westinghouse gets bought by Phillips, and we've been with Phillips, you know, for as long as I can remember, longer than me, actually. But yes, I think there's something to be said about loyalty. I think there's still a place for it. But where I was going, where it changes a little bit on the fixture side of things, is fixtures are a different animal. You know, we were loyal to Phillips because of they had 90% of everything we needed to serve what markets we were in and what we who we sold to and things of that nature. Fixtures is a whole new dynamic that you it's tough to be loyal to any one guy. There's more of them to a certain degree, you know, between Acuity, Genlyte, Cooper, Phillips. Phillips is Genlyte and Cooper, but Cooper's still separated from them. LSI and other guys out there that nobody makes 90% of what you need. And then you get into all the specialty fixture companies that do even further advance that. So it's that's where I think it changes. But I think people understand that more realistically than what the loyalty factor was back in the day.
You know,
so with your,
but hang on a second. I want to talk about the loyalty here thing for a second. You know, we talk about loyalty to distributors, but like if you went to a nailed convention in 1996 or something like that, what you would see is there was three groups. There was the GE people, the Sylvania people, and the Phillips people, and they wouldn't go to each other's parties.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And
oh, we did. I would.
Yeah. But, you know, so from my perspective, like loyalty goes towards me, actually. Like I haven't found that the problem is my loyalty to them. I found the biggest problem is the other way around. Like as they've become desperate over the last LED boom era, they're the manufacturers are the ones that have become disloyal, not the distributors.
Yeah. And you're right. You're right, Michael. I mean, it is a two-way street, and I think that's where have our manufacturers been consistently loyal to us? No. Nobody is. I mean, when it comes right down to it, and that's where I think the game has changed, you know. There's still, it's probably more in our DNA, and I'll get into that here in a second as to why. But as to our loyalty to certain manufacturers, but it has reciprocated enough that it creates that loyalty on both sides of the spectrum, you know. Because, you know, I hate to say it, but here's the harsh reality. It's all about what you bring and how big you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they're looking for. There's no way I could go to Cooper, which I do no business with to speak of, and say, you know, they wouldn't even talk to me. They have no reason to talk to me because to build a relationship takes time. And like you talk about relationships between, you know, manufacturers or between us and customers kind of thing, that still takes time. It takes time within manufacturers. And, you know, quite frankly, the industry's had so much turnover. You know, I hardly know people at, you know, Phillips to a certain degree. Because it's changed so much, and yet I know enough to be dangerous, but it's changed from the old days by far, because they've squeezed their people down too and doing more with less. And so you maintain what you can. You're always looking for new relationships and people, and that's just the nature of the business as well. But I would agree with you. And with that, you know, here's a little bit of our DNA. You know, I mentioned 1939, and part of our company that's, I'd say, would be rather unique is we use the phrase sell to tell. We sell to tell people about lighting and light bulbs and all sorts of different lighting and all that thing. But one of the facets that we take seriously as a company is we sell to tell about our Lord Jesus Christ. And, you know, I did this for you guys just for, you know, everybody's seen that at a ball game, sure. A hockey game, or, you know, everybody holds that up. And what's that mean? And well, the verse behind that says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And these principles they come out of the Bible. And that's where John 3:16 comes from. And it's a verse that we sell to tell people about what Jesus Christ did on the cross. Because it is an important facet and it's very strong in our DNA as a company, back to Henry Voss, to Mike Voss, to myself and many others. Does everybody believe that in my company? I don't know for sure. A good portion do, but it gives us an eternal perspective in our industry that's different than just selling light bulbs. We have a calling above and beyond just selling lighting. There's a verse that talks about that Christ is the light of the world. And it's always fondest to my heart when we talk about something being the light of the world. and we sell lighting. It just, the irony is too good to be true, but it is a reality. And that all begins with that verse and the realities of, you know, what is going on in the world. Our world is so topsy-turvy right now. What's up is down, and what's down is up. But the reality is there's what happens, because we all face the same ending. We're all going to die. Mm. What happens after that? And,
well,
and
let me
that,
ask
that
you, let me ask you, I got to ask you something.
Yeah.
Are you a specific religion? Like, I'm a Catholic.
No.
Are you like a Presbyterian or something? What's your, are you just a
evangelical
Christian?
I'm just a Bible believing. Evangelical Christian.
Okay.
And,
okay. I have a question for you.
Yep.
I have a question.
Sure.
Do you tell people to be like Christ?
After they're saved? Sure.
Yeah. You know what happened to that guy, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that could happen to us, Michael. You know, the reality
because a lot of lot of evangelical Christians, they go around, we got to be more like Christ, and I always go, whoa, hang on a second here, bud, because, you know,
yeah,
like, follow him to where, how far, how far do I follow him? All the way to the cross and get crucified like him? Yeah. That's a calling, brother. I don't know if everyone's got the guts for that.
It is. Yeah, well, that's where I think it separates, as the Bible would say, the sheep from the goats.
There you go.
You know, those who truly believe will. And it is because, quite frankly, even what Christ did on the cross, even if we do die, the reality is where I'm going after that is eternity. Mm-hmm. Now, that's eternity with God in heaven, or it's eternity without God in hell. Mm-hmm. And that's not a place I desire anybody to go to. And that's what drives that message for us as a company, and is part of our DNA, that it's a higher calling, you know. And so that's part of that DNA of loyalty. We're loyal to our Lord as we are loyal to our manufacturers, our customers, and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Maybe to a fault, some people give, you know, there's running a business. I mean, I've spoken on this before in regards to business and Bible. You know, there's verses in the Bible, and this is just common sense stuff. Differing weights are an abomination to the Lord, and a false scale is not good. Mm. We all understand cheating, lying, sure. You know, that's not right. Well, those are biblical concepts that come out of it. You know, here's a verse, Michael. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we shall go to such and such a city and spend a year there, engage in business and make a profit. Did you know that was in the Bible?
Sure. Did you know that to him who has much, more will be given, and he shall have an abundance.
Exactly.
And to him who has not, even what he has shall be taken away. That's a tough one, buddy. I think the Gospels are, I think people, if you're listening to this and you haven't read the Gospels, forget about the rest of it for now. Just go read the words of Christ. He's a badass, actually. If you read, if you read his words, you'll find out, and you understand what a Pharisee is. You'll see why he was crucified.
Oh, yeah.
Well, amen, Brother Jensen. Thank you
for having me on.
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. Can you believe we've spoken for 45 minutes?
No, that went fast.
It went fast. You know, we're going to go from Christianity down to the gangsters at SATCO, Greg Eric. Go to SATCO.com.
We talked about it today, needing all that different product that a distributor can bring, but they can actually bring it from the manufacturing side, everything you need.
Yeah, and if you want to come on down to the NILC, are you coming to the NILC convention, Rob?
I am not. I cannot make it there. Yeah, but I'll see if I can rearrange something. It'd be fun to meet you guys in person, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we could pray for the industry together, and I'm not joking about that. So come on down. If you folks out there, come down to the convention, NAILD.org. It's in September. Go to the website, and you can register there. If you have light bulbs in a warehouse and people call you and you sell them to them, you're a distributor. Give us a call. Join us. And you know what? Give back to the industry, too. You can join some of our committees, Greg. They can get on the educational committee, the accreditation agency advisory committee, all these different things, that tons of things NAILD's doing. So go to NAILD.org. God bless you all out there. Bye for now.